This essay was originally posted in 2017, some 8 years ago. I've revised it in accordance with yesterday's video essay, The Right to Bear Arms, which referenced the 1817 Pentrick false flag, but did not provide the details. The Pentrick false flag was engineered by a government agent known as Oliver the Spy, and it centred around Pentrick, not too far from where I'm sitting now. In fact, a hop, skip and a jump away. Three men were hanged by the tyrannical government, who used the stage event to introduce a raft of acts which curtailed the freedoms of the people. Essentially, we are looking at 208 years of government-sponsored genocide and terrorism. How the British government has been engineering false flag attacks and terrorist atrocities on the people for hundreds of years. It's fair to state that the British government is scared shitless of the people, which of course is how it should be. Quote, "When government fears the people, there is liberty. When the people fear the government, there is tyranny." That's by Thomas Jefferson. What if you were to suggest to the average man in the street that his government, not his own morality or consciousness of wrong and right, but the state that exists without himself, is, and always has been, his enemy and that of the people? He might agree, but most people, I'd wager, would take issue, despite the fact that the British government has a long and ignoble history of engineering staged events in order to increase its powers over the people it falsely claims to represent. These are dangerous times for government right now. The Grenfell Tower inferno and resultant deaths is a stark illustration of the utter contempt those fake poly puppets have for the people. It should certainly be used as another nail in the coffin of a UK government that, in accord with its deplorable history of genocide against the people at home and abroad, appears to have deliberately bypassed any attempts to implement what for most would be basic standards of safety for those who live in these types of housing blocks. And by way of illustration, we have a slide there that lists the Tory MPs who voted against the law making rented homes like Grenfell Tower be fit for human habitation. At the end there is the notorious Nadeem Zahawi. In support of the fact that governments commit genocide upon the people, generation after generation, one could quote abundantly from the annals of history dating back to all civilizations. Government has always been about how to control the people. Tried and tested methods of suppression and control of the people have existed since time immemorial, and these techniques are in constant usage. The allegory of Plato's cave is perhaps the clearest of all the analogies that we may use to understand the significance of how the state uses mind control techniques to shape and mould the hearts and minds of the people. These days, the television and moving image is the technological equivalent of the fire that casts the shadows on the cave wall, creating the false flickering reality by which people figure out the meaning of their lives and behave accordingly. When those techniques break down, the controllers resort to force. It is the Circus Maximus, the grand bread and circus show, and it is the domineering screen of Orwell's 1984. And you may say nowadays, it's this dominating screen has become the Black Mirror, the portable mobile tracking devices that people carry around with them wherever they go. In any event, it operates to such an extent that it successfully dominates the thought processes of all those who come under its thrall. The BBC is the state's vehicle for its promulgation of its messages to the population. This engineering of the collective psyche has been going on for millennia. Religion has played its part too, as has the introduction of a Frankfurt education system that teaches its captive audiences what to think, not how to think. It is, of course, hugely successful. The techniques are tried and tested, and they work. Throw into the mix the psychological developments of the last century. New Age religion via Theosophy, Crowley and Freemasonry, the creation of eugenics, the rise of social Darwinism and Marxism, the viral spread of psychology spun out by Sigmund Freud, his nephew Edward Bernays, and the weaponized anthropology of the Tavistock Institute, and, overarching it all, the control of finance, and one can begin to see clearly the psychological mesh, or matrix of control, that lies between the individual and his natural state of free or critical thinking. It is a mesh that the deep state spends billions of pounds on maintaining. It's a massive, though relatively simple, operation of conditioning and brainwashing that relies totally upon the control of the media, a term only recently used to describe the mass mainstream communications networks. That control is currently under threat as a consequence of the rise of the internet and the independent media, a tsunami of individuals who now have the means and the technology to use their critical thinking skills to disseminate factual information that blows apart the fake machinations of the deep state and the mainstream media. The question as to how and why so much energy and money is spent attempting to control the minds of the people is an interesting one, but it boils down to this. Those in power are scared witless of the people rising up to usurp them. Personally, I find it incredible that anyone would wish to limit the thinking and the lives of others. I am thus opposed to any and every form of control that limits the capacity of the individual to live in accordance with the righteous precept of do unto others as you would have them do unto you, the golden rule by another name, and to prosper on his own terms in line with the principles that have been made plain to us from a variety of sources, including the teachings of the Christ figure. Quote, the summary of the law is composed of two great commandments that both take the form thou shalt. Jesus said unto him, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and with all thy soul and with all thy mind. This is the first and great commandment, and the second is like unto it. Thou shalt love thy neighbour as thyself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. That's from Matthew 22:37-40. These are straightforward enough to need no further comment. Inevitably, as one journeys through life, it becomes clearer that all is not as it should be. An unease forms in the solar plexus of the one who wakes up to the panopticon of psychological manipulation that he is living under. Once he begins to delve into the machinations of the systems that beset him, he grows increasingly conscious of how and why the deep state is an extreme force that exists with one purpose. He learns that the government, without himself, is a collection of extremists whom history has demonstrated beyond doubt is responsible for the mass slaughter of millions of people worldwide. At the moment, it appears that the City of London and the country at large is being subjected to a series of engineered events that are specifically carried out in accordance with the age-old principle of divide and rule. Remember, I wrote this some 8 years ago, but to anyone who is paying attention, it will be immediately clear that this applies as much now in 2025 as it did in 2017. The hung parliament is designed to create the illusion of chaos. The staged events are aimed at injecting fear into the minds of men, both in order to control and subjugate the masses. Remember, this was written in 2017 when the UK did have a hung parliament with Theresa May as the nominal prime minister. To repeat, there's nothing new in this. By way of illustration, let us turn back the clock some 208 years ago. As written about previously, the socio-economic situation in Britain at that time was bubbling with malcontent caused by the oppressions of the elites on the many. A different time, but the same shit. Quote, following the Napoleonic Wars, England was immediately plunged into economic hardship. In the industrial textile towns of the north, wages fell sharply as the factory system took hold. Traditional handloom weavers being some of the worst affected. Weavers who could have expected to earn 15 shillings a week in 1803 saw their wages cut by two-thirds or more. Then came the Corn Laws of 1815, intended to protect British agricultural workers from cheap foreign imports. They actually caused an increase in grain prices and a decrease in supplies, only adding to the poor's woes. These hardships were then further compounded by poor harvests the following year, which resulted in food shortages during the winter of 1816 to 1817. As discontent led to riots, Lord Liverpool's government were facing growing demands for social, political and economic reform. The Luddites were another manifestation of this. The history of these lands makes it plain that when people are treated like shit, they will eventually rise and attempt to shake off their psychological and physical shackles. The ruling classes know this, or at least they should, but one can be forgiven for thinking they do not, given the levels of blatant malfeasance that take place at all levels of government. Malfeasance, which, to reiterate, is perfectly illustrated by the latest Fire of London, the atrocity that took place at the Grenfell Towers near Notting Hill. And there we have a picture of the twin towers of fire, which spell out the numeral 11. The twin towers of Jachim and Boaz, represented by the numerical 11, are the central symbol of Freemasonry, a Zionist satanic cult dedicated to overthrowing religion in general, and in particular to destroying Islam and its Masjid al-Aqsa in Jerusalem, and rebuilding a satanic blood sacrifice temple overseen by the Antichrist or Dajjal. Human sacrifice, often by fire, is a central preoccupation of the highest levels of Freemasonry. Before digging into what has been falsely labelled the last revolution of 1817, it's also worth blowing apart the dubious claim of Theresa May that the Manchester attack of 2017 was the worst terrorist incident the city had experienced, when much of the evidence of the alleged event suggests that it was a faked false flag event. Contrary to the official narrative, whereby it is stated that a 33 kilo bomb was detonated, there is no evidence to suggest there was anything more than a pyrotechnic display that was instigated at the Mariana Grande concert in May of 2017. To get back to this point, which Theresa May rather ridiculously stated about it being the worst terrorist incident that the United Kingdom had ever experienced, it's a matter of fact that the Peterloo massacre was a government attack on the people, and that it was far worse insofar as it was a state-sponsored attack on a gathering of thousands. Quote, on the 16th of August 1819, the huge open area around what's now St. Peter's Square, Manchester, played host to an outrage against over 60,000 peaceful pro-democracy and anti-poverty protesters, an event which became known as the Peterloo Massacre. An estimated 18 people, including four women and a child, died from sabre cuts and trampling. Nearly 700 men, women and children received extremely serious injuries, all in the name of liberty and freedom from poverty. The Pentridge Revolution of 1817 was in fact a false flag event, using patsies and government agents to stir up the people so that the government could impose repressive acts and measures against the populace. It was a staged event organised by Oliver the Spy, a government agent whose real name was William J. Richards. He had been released from jail to work for his masters, and he acted as agent provocateur and the catalyst for the events. The episode was manufactured, founded on the belief of the people that there was going to be a mass uprising that would take place across the country. Accordingly, a body of men was organised, ready to march to Nottingham, gathering support on the way. However, it was all engineered, a false flag event. Quote, Oliver was pulled out of debtor's prison on the proviso he would spy for the government. He was paid on results, so he created those results. And that's from Sylvia Mason, a Pentridge historian. Thus, Richard's role was to foment a fake revolution centred around the towns of Derbyshire and the city of Nottingham itself, in order that the government could be justified in imposing repressive legislation across the country. It was an attempt to launch a revolutionary uprising in Derbyshire by workers convinced by a government spy that a network of similar risings was planned elsewhere. There's evidence that similar plans were afoot in a number of places, but linked only by informers, and the premature events in Derbyshire and some arrests elsewhere led only to disaster. Quote, the principal activist in the Nottingham and Pentridge area was the veteran radical Thomas Bacon, who suggested Pentridge as a base for the rising, possibly because of its proximity to the Butterley Ironworks, which it was hoped to use for the manufacture of pikes and cannon during the coming insurrection. However, Bacon took no part in the rising. Its actual leader was Jeremiah Brandreth, a 27-year-old man who had worked in a number of trades and had only recently moved into the area. Taking charge a few days before 8th of June, he organised support from the area around Pentridge. Government retribution over an event that it had effectively organised was brutal. Quote, the Pentridge Rising had involved only a few hundred men at most, many of them effectively forced into taking part during the night march to Nottingham. Armed with a few guns, homemade pikes, scythes and pitchforks, they killed only one man during the whole episode. The government, however, decided to make an example of them, and 45 were tried for high treason by special commission in Derby in July. Three were hanged, including Brandreth, 30 more were sentenced to transportation, including Bacon. This comment from historian E.P. Thompson on the engineering of the uprising is as applicable to the stage events in 2017 as it was to the Pentridge false flag. Notice the highlighted ingredients and then apply them to the current state of engineered terror at play. Quote, in a sense, the government needed conspirators to justify the continuation of repressive legislation which prevented nationwide popular organisation. The line between the spy and the agent provocateur was indistinct. The informer was paid by piece rate. The more alarmist his information, the more lucrative his trade. Fabricated information might be eagerly accepted by the authorities who propagated the myth. At a certain stage, it is impossible to know how far they were themselves deluded by conspiracies which their own informers engendered. To isolate and terrorise potential revolutionaries, it was possible to adopt a policy of deliberate provocation. In this sense, it was the policies of Pitt in repressing the corresponding societies which set in motion, which led to both Oliver the spy and the Pentridge Rising of 1817. These years reveal such a foul pattern of faked evidence, intimidation and double agents that it is possible to regret that the logic did not work itself out to its proper conclusion. If the Cato Street conspirators had achieved their object in the assassination of the cabinet would have been slain by conspirators whom their own repressive policies had engendered and their own spies had armed. That's from page 530 of E.P. Thompson's History of the English Working Class. Quote, the true nature of Pentridge has been variously distorted as a rebellion or a revolution, an expression of the desire of common folk for armed uprising. In reality, it was largely a deliberate provocation by the state. The motive? To crush the yearnings for democracy. In a letter in 1831, Lord Melbourne, a former Home Secretary, revealed that there was much reason to suspect that the rising was stimulated, if not produced, by the artifices of Oliver. And here is another quote from Sylvia Mason, the Pentridge historian. The government as good as organised it. They named the day in documents and showed they were planning it from 1815. They were afraid a real uprising was coming, so they allowed the Pentridge men to march so they could be arrested and used as scapegoats. And then we have a slide of a newspaper article from the 7th of November, 1817. The headline reads, "Account of the life, trial and behaviour of Jeremiah Brandreth, William Turner and Isaac Landlam, who were executed on the New Drop in front of the county jail, Derby, on Friday, 7th of November, 1817, for high treason." The conclusion is stark. History shows us that whatever the issue or problem may be, government is never the solution. 208 years on from the Pentridge false flag, and we are manifestly facing the same psychological manipulation from a criminal government whose reliance on lies and a captured two-tier justice system run for the benefit of the hidden financial overlords is simply part of the tyrannical playbook. As has always been the case, the antidote to dictatorships of all hues lies with the individual and his non-compliance. Thank you for reading and listening. As ever, I'm very grateful to those who have chucked a few quid into the coffers by way of the Buy Me A Coffee button and or have taken out a subscription to my Substack pages, where, if you like, you can also support me by taking out a paid subscription for £5 a month, which will grant you first dibs, as it were, on my output. Until the next time, my friends, thank you very much, and I'll catch you on the flip side.